Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
I will never forget the first time I experienced profound awe. I went as a teenager with some friends to White Sands National Monument. We spent the morning digging and climbing and sliding down the gypsum dunes, but then after lunch, everybody separated for a bit. I hadn't wandered far before I got to a place where I couldn't see or even hear any of the people I'd arrived with. I was surrounded in every direction by these pristine white hills of sand that were so vast and beautiful and otherworldly. I felt very small and utterly, indescribably at peace. This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. Maybe you've felt awe hiking in the mountains, staring at the Milky Way, floating in the Caribbean. Wherever you get it, it's good for you, and it might even be necessary for leading a full life. Journalist Carlin Flora is author of the book Friendfluence, The Surprising Way Our Friends Make Us Who We Are. Her article, It's Not All About You, About the Value of Awe, is available online at psychologytoday.com. Carlin, welcome to Think.
Hi, thank you.
What is awe?
Right. So there are various definitions, but the sort of psychological research definition describes it as an emotion of self-transcendence and a feeling of admiration and elevation in the face of something that's bigger than the self. So you have those two elements. You have sort of vastness, you have admiration, and then self-transcendence. And it doesn't have to be literally be a big sort of setting. You know, what you were describing is sort of vast. But it could also be something small that still just sort of activates that idea of vastness or our place in the universe and really is transcendent.
What does it require from us? Besides seeking out particular experiences, can we put ourselves in the right frame of mind to experience awe?
Right. So there are studies that show that some people are dispositionally more likely to experience awe. So that's nice if you're one of those people who is just seems to be attuned to awe. But if you're not, you can absolutely just decide to seek it out. I mean, I think it's just we just don't think to do that. We might, you know, plan a certain trip or go to a concert, but I don't think very many of us consciously seek out awe. So just simply having that mindset can help. And many people find it in nature. It's really about looking closely, using all the senses, letting your mind wander, and letting the situation sort of stretch your brain in a way that that takes you out of its sort of normal grooves and patterns.
Reading this piece, I was thinking about the fact that these days there is a lot of online video content that seems designed to inspire awe. But that almost feels... It never quite works, right? You can't experience it secondhand in the same way that you can when you've got this first-person exposure.
Right. That's an interesting point, because I noticed that trend, and that's sort of what sparked the article in part. And, you know, some researchers will say that mood does lift when you watch these videos, so they do have some of the effects that real life, quote-unquote, awe has. So it's if you can't get outside, it's not... You know, it's a pretty good substitute. But one researcher I spoke to, Paul Piff, he said that he thinks the popularity of these online videos that really, you know, try to conjure awe is just the fact that we're starved for awe, that we don't get to get outside that much, that we're not as involved in artistic experiences as perhaps, you know, people in other eras were. So he sort of sees it as a sign that we're not getting enough of it. But there are some benefits to the online awe, and in fact, one study found that the most emailed, the most shared articles in the New York Times over a period of years were articles that dealt with awe. So when we read about awe, it's not just that it stimulates us or makes us puts us in this better frame of mind. It also kind of inspires a communal sort of thinking where we want to share it with others. We don't just want to savor it by ourselves. So that's kind of an interesting component of the online awe phenomenon.
Well, the sharing thing is interesting because it allows us to have this profound experience with someone else that would seem to bond us to the other person.
Yes, absolutely. It is a bonding agent. And, you know, again, we might think of awe as something that you experience alone when you, you know, hike to the top of a mountain and you're there and you're the king of the world. But it is fundamentally communal, because when you think about awe, say, in evolutionary terms, we're meant to sort of all be interested in this higher power so that we can all then bond through that. And so it does form community. And Paul Piff, who I mentioned before, actually was really interested in that and how awe sort of influences social impulses. And in fact, people who experience awe do go on to show more generosity and more sort of helpfulness towards others and less of a sense of entitlement. So it really does foster communal feelings. And you can just sort of think of a different era where people had to kind of, you know, bond together and form and cooperate in order to survive and accomplish things. And one thing that would sort of keep them all together would be, you know, the sort of fear / fascination with the elements, right? Mm. That would be sort of a primitive kind of religion, would be, you know, worshiping the sun or worshiping the elements. So it's really this tie between religion and awe that lends the cooperative element to all of this.
You note in the piece that religion essentially gives us a structure for ritualizing awe, which is a really fascinating way to think about it. You know, many people may be aware of those studies that find that overall, religious people report themselves to be more content than people who are not religious.
Right. And I think part of that is the community. You know, if you belong to a church or a place of worship, you have a built-in community there. And we know that the social bonds are important. But yes, the awe is ritualized. And I had never thought of that before either. But many places of worship are quite beautiful aesthetically. There might be some, you know, iconography that's really striking, and then some beautiful music, and then rituals like chanting that sort of get us outside of our own heads. So all of these are kind of ways to experience awe in a weekly or however often you go, in a regular manner, and it's sort of all there for you.
Are we wired to default to self-absorption?
Yes, I mean we're definitely it's a battle. We're self-absorbed, right? But then we have to depend on others to survive. So I think that's our essential struggle. But you know, I think most of us feel this sense of self-absorption and this really inability to get out of our heads, to not think about our worries, And yeah, experiencing awe really does pull you out. You don't have to, it's not laborious. You don't have to, you know, try to sit there and meditate, you know, which is very hard for a lot of people. You're just swept away. If you see Niagara Falls, boom, there, you know, your worries are gone. So I think that's a really nice aspect to it, is that it's overpowering in a way that's kind of relieving.
It's interesting to think about children in the context of this discussion. On the one hand, anyone who knows children knows that they can be just incredibly self-absorbed, and yet the world is so new to them that they're really open to being awestruck.
Yes, that's such a great point. I mean, I think, you know, talking about the definition of awe, one other way to put it is it's something that when you encounter something that doesn't fit in with your current frame of reference, right? Like whatever you know cannot accommodate this new thing, say the idea that, you know, there are many, multiple universes. So you literally feel your brain stretching to accommodate this new idea. And that's sort of where the, you know, mind-blowing aspect metaphorically comes in. And children are having those moments all the time. You know, they're having these epiphanies about how the world works and how things are connected. And then they're also just so attuned to natural beauty. You know, my 4-year-old will say, "Mommy, look at the clouds," you know, and, you know, I'll look up and notice something. And, you know, grown-ups just, we just don't do that, unfortunately. And we also don't have those mind-blowing epiphanies as much as children do. So it's really nice to sort of get some secondhand awe from little people.
Does our capacity for awe diminish when we build up a sort of shell of cynicism?
I think so. I think, you know, in the article, I spoke to a psychologist who said, you know, it seems like there's just this joy in making things profane. You know, there's this really strong sense of cynicism running through our culture. And, you know, some of it is good and entertaining, and we all like irony and, you know, comedians who use irony. But yeah, it can sort of stop you from just saying, hey, I love this sunset, you know, to just be sincere, to just, you know, I think we're all afraid of looking, you know, naive maybe or not being clever. And it's just so I do think that it can run counter to opening ourselves up to awe if we're just always looking for the twist or the ironic comment or take on things.
Yeah, in a way, being open to awe would seem like also making yourself somewhat vulnerable, right? I mean, you have to be aware that somebody might think you're ridiculous for, you know, being awestruck by a cloud formation or by, you know, watching a butterfly emerge from its cocoon.
Right. You don't want to seem, sort of naive or not critical. But I think... you know, the word vulnerability that you used is a good one, because when you feel overpowered, say, by a natural scene like a landscape of you know, very tall mountains, you do feel so, you feel small, but it's not small in like a humiliating or weak way. It's small in a relieving way, in the sense that I am a part of something much bigger. My worries, therefore, are small. So it's that kind of vulnerability that can actually make you feel better. Because if you're lost in your own mind and your own worries, what is the premise there? The premise is I'm in control of everything, and therefore I could mess things up. So I have to worry about all these things. But when you're in the middle of an awesome experience, you're not in control, and that's actually really nice.
It's liberating that you don't have to run the world.
Yeah.
What's the relationship, do you think, between awe and gratitude?
Right. So, when, you know, psychologists try to sparse all these concepts and try to, you know, develop ways to test different feelings that are related, such as gratitude and awe and then well-being. And all of these things sort of go together. I think if you're... You know, again, it's about living in the moment. So when do we feel gratitude? We feel gratitude when we're really focusing on something and appreciating it and not thinking about, you know, where we should be or where we could be. So, yeah, anything that can sort of bring you right into the moment is going to spark gratitude. And then again, in these experiments that Paul Piff did, where he really tried to measure the effects of awe, he found that people, yeah, felt a greater sense of gratitude and a less sense of entitlement. And, of course, that's a word we hear bandied about a lot, especially when describing millennials. So it's kind of an interesting antidote to that strain, their critique in the culture of people being too entitled or feeling too entitled.
It sounds really challenging to try to quantify people's experience of awe.
Yeah. Yes. Well, actually, Paul Piff said that when he told his mentor that he wanted to just study awe, his mentor said, "Oh, good luck with that. You know, it's not really something you can put in a test tube." But he's just designed these really neat experiments. One of which involved having some college students go to the Redwood Forest and look up at 200-foot eucalyptus trees for a couple of minutes. And then another group looked at a tall building for the same amount of time. And then they went back to the lab and they took, you know, these standard kind of questionnaires that of well-being and other measures. And the ones who looked at the eucalyptus trees were happier. And then they picked up more dropped pencils that a graduate student purposefully dropped to test their
so you can go back to your unrewarding job right after you've experienced awe. You'll be okay with it. We're speaking this hour with journalist Carlin Flora. Her article, It's Not All About You, is available online at psychologytoday.com. If you'd like to join our conversation, tell us how you have experienced awe. We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Fall registration is now open with courses in art, architecture, history, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about the experience of awe with journalist Carlin Flora, whose article, It's Not All About You, is on Psychology Today. There's a link to it off the Think page of KERA.org. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372. Find us on Twitter at KERA Think or email think at KERA.org. Carlin, does depression make us incapable of awe?
I don't think it makes us incapable, but I think depression, you know, sort of starts a cycle where we're more self-absorbed, we're less likely to sort of look outside ourselves, or less likely to want to shake ourselves out of our current situations, and therefore we might not be putting ourselves in situations where we can appreciate awe. But if we do sort of seek out awe, then it can be a really good antidote to depression or to anxiety. And, of course, those two are very related and kind of, you know, different sides of the same coin. And so if you think about it, think about therapy, for example, used to treat depression or anxiety. You might think of that as the opposite of awe, right? Because it's kind of encouraging you to talk about yourself, think about yourself, you know, really delve into your thoughts and feelings. But the psychologists I talked to really sort of saw a big connection between therapy and seeking out awe. Because if you're in therapy, the reason that you're focusing on your thoughts and feelings is to sort of give them a little less powers, to kind of tell yourself, okay, I might be thinking, oh, I'm such a loser and nothing's, you know, goes right for me. And so to sort of challenge that thought, right? And to just decide that it's not a fact. So awe does the same thing, because it sort of takes us out of those thoughts. So lessening the power of those thoughts, in other words, can happen when you're awestruck or when you're in therapy. And so the navel gazing that goes on in therapy is really, you know, you're doing that so you won't navel gaze, yeah. after you're done with therapy. And you know, one man I spoke to who's suffered from really bad anxiety in his life talked about this connection between therapy and awe. And for example, for him, when he was, you know, going through a really hard time, he decided to go sit under a linden tree every day for a couple of weeks for 5 minutes. And it just sort of allowed him to reflect and to sort of put things in perspective, thinking about how long the tree had been around, you know, the beauty of how the tree developed and the intricacy there, and to just sort of situate his problems in this bigger landscape where they're not so overwhelming.
It's remarkable because it's counterintuitive, right? Like, on the one hand, we feel anxiety because we don't feel like we have control over things that we're worried about. When we experience awe, it's like we recognize more than ever that we have control over nothing, but somehow it's okay.
Right. That it's just, and again, you know, that goes back to it's freeing. It's freeing to feel that you're not just alone in this, you know, struggle to live and thrive. You're part of this huge universe, world that we can't even really conceptualize and that we know very little about. And so that is freeing. But at the same time, so you might say, okay, well then, but that's putting you in the realm of, well, I'm just a speck of dust, so nothing matters anyway. Why do I, you know, why bother? But conversely, it can make you feel like, I'm so lucky to be this speck of dust in this amazing universe. You know, we're a product of all these accidents, and many, many accidents had to occur in order for us to be here. So again, it's the smallness actually makes you feel better rather than making you feel like, oh, well, what's the point if I'm just this little speck of dust anyway?
Okay, rainbows and colossal forests and shooting stars are one thing. We can also feel awe from something really terrifying like a tsunami or a tornado.
Right. I mean, I think who hasn't felt sort of excited when you know, some sort of catastrophe develops? And then, of course, once we see the damage, it's, you know, we're full of sadness and anguish. But I think in the moment when you sort of see a big overwhelming storm, it's quite exciting. And again, it's just sort of that idea that we don't really control anything, and that there are just these forces that are, you know, difficult to predict, and you know, you think of these tornado chasers,
yeah.
who, you know, which is, you know, on one hand sort of sounds so dangerous and ridiculous, but you can sort of see that it's this thrill of grappling with nature. And that's, you know, imagine our ancestors had the same thing of, you know, just not much more so because they didn't, you know, have scientific understanding of these uncontrollable elements that can overpower us.
All right, let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. You're welcome to ask a question. You can also tell us a story of your own experiences of awe. Let's go first to Steve in Denton. Hi, Steve.
Hi. While you guys were talking, you brought up that one tidbit about tragedy. I had one awe experience that my grandfather passed away in my arms back in 97.
Hmm.
That was the most awesome, peaceful experience of my life. I mean, wow. I still get goosebumps remembering it, being able to feel him leave his body and feel him float around the house before he went up. I mean, it's amazingly humbling experience. And what I had actually was sitting on hold with was actually going back to how the Navy didn't push the sense of awe out of me by the rigidity and all that, because I was getting ready for a high school road trip to go back to high school reunion. And going across the nation, and I ended up in Zion National Park, and the beauty and the wonder, it was just fantastic. I mean, just being able to walk through there and see that history of the earth and all that stone and the waterfall that was like 400 feet tall or something like that, it was just fantastic. And at the same time, I was going to school up at UNT and doing astronomy labs, and so at night, I'd get to teach these labs and get to look back in time and space with telescopes. So you put that all together, and I've now got several kids, and we're trying to teach them about awe. And when we go down to the beach in Galveston, and they get to see the seashells on the shore, it's like, okay, look what came up today. You know, look what the waves brought up on shore. It's like, wow, and wonder, and just, you know, trying to get them to see that and teach them that. So.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for your call. It sounds, Carlin, like Steve might be one of those lucky people who is dispositionally inclined to feel awe.
Right. But, you know, what he's doing with his children might instill that in them, whether or not they have that innate disposition. He's pointing out little moments of wonder around us. And it can, you know, it can be so simple. It can be appreciating a breeze or how you feel when the sun is on you. So that he's actively cultivating a sense of wonder in his children is really nice.
All right, I want to be clear that I am not condoning this, but of course we know that a lot of people have sought awe from hallucinogenic agents. Does artificial awe that comes from, like, drug use have any of the same benefits as the kind triggered by real-life experience?
They do, actually, and this is a really interesting area of research in psychology now, is there are several very reputable labs, Johns Hopkins is one of them, who are looking at psilocybin, which is the compound in magic mushrooms, and giving them in a very controlled setting to patients to test for their effects on things like anxiety. And they've so far have been, you know, very powerful. There was one experiment that where cancer patients were given this protocol, and their anxiety about death was lessened. So, yeah, really beneficial effects, and in a controlled environment that wouldn't bring, you know, some of the health risks that drugs would have, you know, outside of that setting. And you can sort of, again, think of it in that mind-blowing, expansive way. And this, you know, with drugs, it's in your head. You're not, it's not an external cue, but it's just sort of taking this journey in your head where you're seeing things from a very different perspective and kind of shaking everything around and seeing where it settles and seeing how that shifts your ideas of meaning and your place and this issue of control versus a freeing lack of control.
Okay, so I love Carlsbad Caverns, right? I've been back five or six times, but I'm almost ashamed to admit this, because by the end of 3 hours, inevitably, hiking through one space more astonishing than the next, I get a little numb.
Awe fatigue.
That
should be a follow-up article. Yeah, right. I could see that, you know, it's never going to be as good as that first time you see the landscape. So I think that's probably a good point, because you don't want to set people up for failure as they're looking to seek out awe. You don't want to make everyone feel that their mind is going to be blown every second that they're in a natural, you know, a spot of natural beauty. But so it might be go back to variety, or, you know, also tapping into your interests. I mean, some people don't get as much of a thrill out of outdoor spaces, but they really love learning about new theories, or they like, you know, attending a music concert where there's just real synchrony, and that's sort of the transcendent thing for them when people come together and create music that transcends each individual musician. So it might be a matter of, you know, figuring out what really activates that awesome feeling for you.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also email think@kera.org. Let's go next on the phone to Jose in Fort Worth. Hi, Jose.
Hi. How you guys doing?
Good. Thank you.
I was listening to the comments of the young lady about Mother Nature. And, yeah, I mean, Mother Nature is fantastic, and it's exciting. And, in fact, the one thing that I'm not scared of, it's Mother Nature for some reason. Big tornadoes or big storms that come in, and I don't get scared. I get excited. And maybe the first man on Earth, you know, came and wondered, you know, what is creating all of this, you know, because they didn't understand the scientific part of it. So I was thinking that maybe that was the God concept, you know, the idea.
The origins of God.
Something very big was creating all of this. that's what I think.
Thanks for your call. What do you think about that, Carlin?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be the evolutionary psychology perspective is that, these uncontrollable forces and sort of beautiful configurations and in nature sort of inspire us to wonder, you know, what is behind it all? What is the higher power? And that, you know, as I was saying before, in turn kind of bonds us to each other through ritualistic ways of you know, experiencing a higher being or relating to a higher being. So yeah, it definitely makes sense that these sort of natural phenomena would inspire, you know, a need for meaning and also a need for a sense of some control, you know, over this. So if I pray to the God of tornadoes, maybe I won't get hurt. So it again goes back to that sort of struggle between being small and being self-absorbed and thinking that we are actually the center of the universe.
Things that inspire awe are often explained as being indescribable, right? We can try, but it always seems that words do not do justice to what we have seen or heard or experienced. You think there's something do we need to just shut up every once in a while?
Yes, I think especially if you're, you know, kind of a verbal person, it can be a relief to get out of that mode of logical thinking and to accept that there's some experiences that are just meant to be experiences. It's not about the story or the interpretation. It's about the experience that connects us to other things in a deeper, nonverbal way.
All right, let's go back to the phones at 1-800-933-5372. We have Charles calling from Fort Worth. Hello, Charles.
Hello. Fascinating program.
Thanks.
Loving it. I'm a minister in Fort Worth, and of course, the whole experience of awe has deep spiritual implications. My question is, how do we see a thing for what it is? I'm thinking about armchair philosophy that I took in seminary. The phenomenologist thought that the meaning of life was to see a thing for what it is, not freight it and weight it down with experiences from outside that thing, but to see that thing for its beauty and its mystery, to sort of draw a circle around it and receive it for what it is.
I love that, Charles, because it's both a very simple idea and a very hard thing to achieve.
Yeah, that it's really beautiful because it's really about, taking something on its own terms, studying it, its form, and using all the senses to experience it. Yeah. So I think again, it's kind of it's a humble stance toward everything around us to really appreciate it on the level that the caller is talking about.
You say it's about using all the senses to experience it. Can you talk about how awe affects our perception of time?
Yeah, so awe does slow time down, and that is actually a link to happiness and well-being. Maybe not an obvious link, but it probably goes back to being in the moment. So yeah, it actually does apparently slow down our perception of time, and that's sort of a great antidote to the busy, you know, modern mindset that always feels time is running out.
So it turns out that people can have, as you mentioned earlier, little micro doses of awe throughout the day. It doesn't you don't have to be out in a national park or somewhere. You can, as the one gentleman that you spoke to, you know, looked up at a tree. There are mm-hmm. ways that we can bring nature into everyday life.
Yes. And, you know, when you're in an urban environment, it is, you know, it seems hard. And there are studies showing that, you know, people do experience more stress in urban environments. And even just going out into the countryside for a little bit can lower their stress hormone levels. But you can definitely seek this out anywhere. One way in an urban setting is to find a place with water, like maybe there's a city square with a big water fountain. Water has a really calming effect just on our bodies and therefore our minds. So that's one way. And then we can just, you know, as I said before, you can read about the latest you know, theories of physics and explaining the universe and the origin of the universe and sort of stretch your brain that way. Or you can just look really carefully at, you know, the things that are available to all of us, such as the clouds that my son pointed out today.
We're speaking today to journalist Carlin Flora. You can find a link to her article, It's Not All About You, on the Think page of KERA. If you'd like to join us, call 800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Fall registration is now open with courses in art, architecture, history, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with journalist Carlin Flora. We have a link to her Psychology Today article, It's Not All About You, which is about awe, on the Think page of KERA.org. If you'd like to join our conversation, ask a question, or share a story of awe, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@KERA.org. Carlin, can awe make us better people?
Yes. So when we're pulled out of our own heads, as we know the experience of awe does, then we often get a sense, a sort of communal sense. You know, maybe we're grounded more in this notion that we're not alone here. And so it does, you know, in these experiments that Paul Piff and others have done, show to make us more generous and to actually act on that by helping others more actively than some who have not been exposed to awe. So yeah, so I think it goes back to that kind of paradox of you might experience awe by yourself, but it takes you out of yourself and it helps you feel connected. And so it was really, you know, it's really a social emotion, even though we don't think of it that way.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We have Ricardo on the line in Irving. Hi, Ricardo.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
So my question about awe is, how is it changed or the effects of it implicated by whether or not you are sharing it with someone? So, like, you know, for example, people go on dates all the time that, you know, where you do something that's kind of like awe-inspiring. So, like, you go to, you know, you see something, you know, that's beautiful in nature, or you watch like a sunset or something. How are the, you know, is there any sort of research or hypotheses about how the effects of awe are changed by the fact, by a shared experience. If you share, you know, an awesome experience with someone, is that different than, you know, experiencing it yourself? And does that have any sort of, impact on the relationship between you and someone else?
What do you know about that, Carlin?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know of any studies that have looked at people experiencing awe in pairs like that. But there is research showing that if you, say, on a date, go through an emotional experience together, which, and you know, awe is a powerful emotion, so maybe that could be included. But another example of that would be if you do something scary together, like you go on a roller coaster or you walk across a big shaky bridge, then the date tends to go better. You're bonded more by sharing this emotional experience and experiencing a sort of adrenaline rush together. So if we extrapolate from that, I think we could say that, you know, experiencing awe together would bond people, certainly. And also, you know, the experience, to go back to your question about, finding awe in anywhere, I think sometimes the experience of falling in love can feel like awe. That's sort of losing yourself in another person, as opposed to losing yourself to a natural landscape.
Hmm. All right, let's go next on the phone to Charlene in Arlington. Hi, Charlene.
Hi. I'm 80 years old, and the first awesome experience that I have ever had occurred in 1948 in Nevada, where I was raised. My father and I were on our first ever expedition together. Hmm. We went up to the Black Rock Desert in the northwest corner of Nevada on a little dirt road to come into the valley. And looking over, we saw what looked almost like prehistoric cliffs. And on top of the cliffs, here came a herd of Mustangs, which we looked mm-hmm. at through the binoculars, that was the most beautiful, wild, free thing I had ever seen. And I have never forgotten it in all these years.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that story. How beautiful that is. I completely was with Charlene as she was telling that story, Carlin.
Yes, that was a wonderful description. You can just feel the visual elements, the sound of the Mustangs, and just the surprise element. Turning a corner and seeing something that you don't expect to see.
It is interesting that people talk about awe, and there's this idea that everybody says they will never forget it, right? Very few people would say, yeah, I've probably experienced a lot of awe and I don't really recall. It sticks with you.
Yeah, I think at least certain experiences do. And again, if you're trying to cultivate awe every day, maybe you're not going to remember every experience. But I think a lot of us, yeah, have stories where we just remember being struck, and it's kind of a punch in the gut, but a nice punch in the gut.
the one good one. All right, let's go to Fort Worth again and speak with John. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Oh, good. For people that live here in the western end of the Metro Mess, let me recommend that if you want a place where you can forget you're in the city, get a little solitude, be among some trees, there's a place called Tandy Hills Natural Area on the east side of Fort Worth, just south of Interstate 30 in the Meadowbrook area, which I promise you, if you walk off down one of those little trails, you can't hear the city, you can't smell the city. It's truly like being in the country. Alternative to that, on the northwestern side of Fort Worth, around Lake Worth, there's a lot of open area. Yesterday, I was driving down Silver Creek Road, and I saw a deer and her fawn strolling casually across the road. There are any number of places, I can't speak so much for Dallas, in Fort Worth where the city hasn't quite paved everything yet.
Hmm. Well, thank you for sharing your secrets with us, John. I hope they won't be overrun too quickly, but I'm glad that you told us about those.
Well, I figure the next time I turn off of Loop 820 on Silver Creek, there'll probably be a Motel 6 sitting there, but there you go.
So get it while you can.
Ladies, have a lovely day.
You too. Thanks.
Goodbye.
Do you have places near where you are, Carlin? Is it place for you? Is it art? Is it music? What is your best source of awe?
Right. So I live in New York City, And so it is hard, obviously, to get those sort of Western or Southwestern landscapes and views that you guys have. But and I think I've always kind of prided myself on being an indoor person, but I think I'm recently becoming more aware of the value of being outdoors and, you know, hearing stories of a friend who loves to hike and how it feels to challenge yourself physically, but also just commune with nature and then get to the top and really get to look around and see not just a, you know, an accomplishment, but a really breathtaking sort of scene that you just can't see when you're looking at a little screen all day. So I think for me, traditionally, it's come from music. You know, I think one of the punch in the gut moment for me was several years ago going to a concert in the Cloisters, which is a museum here that's a medieval museum. So a very beautiful setting, you know, akin to what a very old Catholic church in Europe might look like. And there was a medieval choir around Christmas time singing this very moving, sad hymn called In the Bleak Midwinter. It's based on a Christina Rossetti poem. Mm-hmm. And that moment, I even today when I'm describing it right now, I feel like I want to cry. Like it was just, there's just something so moving about the place, the setting, the music, the lyrics of the song, and the sadness in the song, all just coming together to, you know, really take my breath away and make me think about how beautiful this world can be.
Let's go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. Mike is calling from Plano. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well,
thanks. You know, what you were just talking about right there, I like to describe as an encounter with the divine, not necessarily a divinity, but a deity, but the divine, the consciousness that there is something much larger than we can possibly comprehend, and we are privileged enough, for whatever reason, to experience it. And I went through something like that just recently. You know, we all have very high stress lives, and we needed a break, so we went down to Galveston, and of course, there's the restorative, you know, being by the water. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. But I did one thing extra different this time around. I wanted to wake up and see the sunrise. And, you know, of course, that's only you can see when it raises up out of the water. So I had a chart. I knew what time it was going to rise. I knew what direction to look. So I got up early. I was alone. And I went out there. And it was just pitch black, as only, you know, it's the night and you're on the water. And all of a sudden, all I could think about was, this is a Genesis moment. You know, darkness is upon the face of the water. I mean, I can't quote it correctly, but you get that impression that everything is dark, no form, no void. You can't see anything. And then all of a sudden, the light starts and starts even before the sun rises. It's just, you know, the twilight. And the next thing you know, everything becomes visible. You know, you can make out the horizon. You can make out the land, the water. There's birds all of a sudden, you know, just, you know, going for their morning catch. And even as far as stars go, you know, it's just, that's all before the sun rises. I mean, you can see some incredible stars, and you can even see some man-made ones, you know, the ships at anchor or the platforms out in the Gulf. And I experience that, and it's such an everyday miracle. I mean, you know, it happens every day, and it's a restorative thing. And I got to tell you, 2 weeks on, and I can't help but think about it. And now today, what you were talking about just goes to that entirely.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for that story. That is like the best travel advertisement for Galveston ever. You know, a lot of Texans are like, it's a cheap vacation. But it sounds like you had a great time. So thanks for sharing that. Let's hear now what Carol has to say in Dallas. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What a great show. I want to express a moment that I had just a few years ago in driving out in New Mexico. And a friend had said to me, we need to go to Abiquiu. And as we topped this hill, it was just such overwhelming beauty that I had never seen and literally had to pull off to the side of the road and just stare at it. Now, I've been to the Grand Canyon and seen that, but I didn't experience the awe that I saw in this moment, I think because I didn't expect it. And my kind of question to you guys is, I'm not so sure awe is something that you can seek. I think you can be open to it, But I think if you're expecting it or seeking it, it maybe doesn't have the impact. And I'd like to get your guest comment on that.
That's a really interesting observation. Mm. Thanks, Carol.
Yeah, that's such a great point. I think the surprise element, we've heard that theme throughout the show of people kind of coming upon something versus, you know, as you say, expecting to see the Grand Canyon that has this reputation. So yeah, it might be that those really big moments of awe kind of fall in our laps. So I guess we'll just have to look at it in terms of all the benefits of nature and being in the moment, even if they don't really rise to the level of awe. You know, seeking out appreciation for these things does really have benefits in terms of mental health.
Do you think that awe can shape our temperament? Can it actually change who we are?
Well, I think that would be kind of a slow process, and maybe that would be in conjunction with some other mindset or lifestyle changes. But you know, sure, why not? I think people, you know, have epiphanies all the time, religious or spiritual, in a more general sense, epiphanies related around awe that do sort of change their perspective and their behavior in kind of meaningful and lasting ways.
Have you met people who say that they haven't had an awe experience, or is this universal?
I have not yet met someone who has never been in awe. I would love to meet this forever and
this
always
robot.
Jaded person, if he or she is out there. Jaded from birth. But, I do think... tying it back to cynicism, or, you know, maybe certain people have a kind of a sense of humor that might kind of cut some of these experiences off. But no, I think that this is pretty universal. And the reason it's universal is because it's tied in with our survival. Without awe to kind of bring us together and force us to cooperate with people who are not related to us, we wouldn't have, you know, had all these other achievements that we've had of creating, you know, our society. And, you know, one of the callers talked about the sunset, and I was thinking when he was talking about how he was describing something that's dramatic yet elemental. And you know, a lot of us are sort of working in this realm of information. We're constantly looking at screens and getting all these, you know, little data points thrown at us. And nothing, there's so much volume, but it doesn't feel that dramatic and it's not elemental. So it just makes sense that these moments would be so refreshing and restorative to us, given the kind of work that a lot of us do these days.
Journalist Carlin Flora is author of the book Friendfluence. You can find a link to her article, It's Not All About You, on the Think page of KERA.org. Carlin, it's always a pleasure. Thanks very much for making time for us.
Thank you for having me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Samantha Guzman is associate producer and Jeff Whittington is executive producer. Our Twitter handle is at KERA Think. Mine is at Chris Boyd Think. The show's email address is think@KERA.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have an awesome day.